Chapter 3.
Fuck!
I didn't have my keys or phone. They were in Nif's backpack, and that was still attached to Nif. I didn't feel better, so I said it again. Then again, I pounded the roof of my El Camino. People milled around the lot, huddled together and crying. Several more police cars had arrived, blocking off the exits. A few cops stood in the destroyed entrance to the skate arena, but as I watched, they received a call and rushed to their cars, rolling off. 5 cop cars remained, all with pulsing lights, but no cops were left.
She's calling to you. Right now.
Hey, man. Where's Nif?
Said a familiar voice. I looked up and glared. Scooter. One of Nif's old friends from when she worked at the record store. He saw my eyes and took a step back.
Oh, man,
he said.
I didn't know.
He took a drag from his cigarette.
That blows, man. Wow.
I didn't like Scooter. I didn't like any of Nif's old co-workers from the record store. I don't know what Scooter's real name was, nor did I care. He was a short dude, maybe 5'5", and he had a pair of fuzzy dice tattooed on the side of his shaved head, which I thought was one of the stupidest fucking tattoos I'd ever seen. He was a talker, too. A guy who never shut up. He seemed to be everywhere we were. Concerts, roller derby. Once we even saw him at the zoo with his parents. He drove a big-ass Suburban with a skull and crossbones decal on the back. I looked around, but I didn't see it in the parking lot.
You got your truck here?
Yeah.
He dropped his cigarette and pulled out his keys, which were attached to a thick chain on his pants. He nodded across the street to the EG's parking lot. Sure enough, his old truck sat there, double parked.
You need a ride, man?
Yeah,
I said. I took off across the street toward his truck and he followed. He didn't stop talking.
Man, this is some of the most fucked up shit I've ever seen. When that fat Peaches chick had that thing on her face. Oh, sorry,
he said, remembering that Cece was Nif's cousin.
Anyway, I thought it was like a joke. I mean, didn't you? Remember last week when they set that dude's ass on fire? That was a joke. He wasn't even hurt or nothing. Anyway, I saw the thing before it happened, you know? I was on the floor waiting for the band to play, and I saw this slug thing.
I was barely listening, but I paid more attention at that.
And she walked past me and started poking at this slug thing. It had come up from a hole in the floor. I thought someone had spilled a milkshake, so I didn't pay too much attention at first. Then she ran past me, waving her arms like a chicken, and it was on her face. And I fucking laughed, man. I thought it was a joke. Then all that shit started. Oh, man, it's a fucking monster, isn't it? Like that Cloverfield thing, only it's made out of goddamn roller derby girls.
In the distance, an explosion echoed, but I couldn't see where it came from. We ran to his truck, and he fumbled with his keys. He had to stand on the wheel to get the door open, but he got it open and climbed in. He looked down at me from the driver's seat.
So where are we going? We're following that thing.
His goofy, this shit is fun smile faded.
Are you crazy? Why?
Why the hell do you think it has my wife?
Scooter shook his head.
I'm sorry, man, but I'm not going anywhere near that thing. If it doesn't kill us, then the fucking Air Force will when they start dropping bombs.
I pulled him out of the truck with my left hand and smashed him in the nose with my right fist. It was the first time in my life I had ever punched a person, and I'm pretty sure I did it wrong because my hand exploded in pain. He dropped to the ground, his head banging into the open threshold of his truck. I put my foot on his chest, grabbed his keychain, and pulled until the belt loop on his dickies snapped.
Sorry, Scooter,
I said as I climbed into the truck and slammed the door. Scooter stood, holding his face as blood poured. Behind him, workers from the EGs stood wide-eyed. I felt bad, but then I remembered why I disliked Scooter in the first place, and my guilt eased. He screamed and pounded on the window as I threw the truck into reverse. He pulled out his cell phone, I presumed to call 911, but instead, he threw it at the windshield and missed.
You're a fucking idiot,
I said as I tossed the truck into drive and drove away. I had to get to the monster. The grinder, the kid had called it. I didn't know what I was going to do when I reached it, but I had to find Nif. If she was still alive, stuck somewhere in the middle of that thing, I had to find a way to help her.
She's calling to you. Right now. They're calling you.
We'd been together for about 1.5 years when she dropped a nuclear bomb in my lap.
Adam,
she said one night, out of nowhere.
I had an abortion.
We were downtown, eating at the Nomery, a favorite haunt of ours because it was good, cheap, and open 24 hours. We'd become regulars, meeting up with our friends, sometimes at 3 a.m. Tonight, we were the only customers in the entire place, but she said it right as the waiter poured more coffee into her cup. The poor guy looked at me, eyes wide, and fled. I just stared at her, my brain not processing her words. She might as well have said, "I've spontaneously grown a penis." My brain rebooted.
What? When?
More than a year ago. I got pregnant after that first time.
What?
I always wore a condom, and she was on the pill, too. She insisted on the double protection. She was paranoid about getting pregnant. At that, she burst into tears, and words just poured out of her.
I didn't want to fuck up your life. I was always jealous of you. I wanted to be like you. You were going to college. You were going to be somebody. But I knew you weren't some asshole. That you would never leave me if you knew I had a baby coming. So I got rid of it. Rid of them. They were twins.
I started to respond, but she kept talking.
But you didn't leave, and I fucked up your life anyway.
I went round to sit next to her in the booth and put my arms around her.
You're the best thing that ever happened to me,
I said. She sobbed and grabbed my jacket, burying her face.
I love you,
I whispered into her ear. I meant it, too.
I don't care if you had an abortion. I wish you had told me earlier, but it doesn't change anything. You haven't fucked up my life. I didn't know what I wanted or who I was until I met you. You helped me find myself.
She wrapped her arms around my waist and held onto me so tight it hurt. She cried and cried.
Remember rule number 2,
I said. She cried for a long time, and I didn't say anything else. She finally looked up at me, her face streaked with mascara.
You either marry me or dump me. That's the only way you're going to get me to let go of you right now.
So, I married her. We were both 19. We got into my car, drove the 450 miles to Las Vegas, and we got married by a black Elvis impersonator at the first chapel we found. We went to some government place to make it official, then we drove home and announced it to all of our friends. Sometimes I think about how things would have been if we'd kept the babies. Twins. Holy cow. We weren't ready. Hell, we weren't ready to get married either. But I think we would have managed okay. Niff thought about the babies a lot, too. It ate her up inside. By the time she was 20, several of our friends were having kids. I could see it in Niff's eyes every time she looked at one of her pregnant friends. She was thinking about what could have been. We both wanted kids, but we both wanted to wait until we were older and make more money. And were less stupid. Like, with the drugs. I smoked weed, but not too often. I tried heroin once, acid 3 times, cocaine a number of times. I never saw the big deal. Then again, I never got addicted. Niff smoked a whole lot more than I did. And while I think weed should be legalized and all that, I don't think anyone would disagree that you shouldn't be doing that stuff around a baby. So we decided to wait. We both had a lot of growing up to do, and we didn't want to risk screwing up a kid. As it turned out, Niff had more growing up to do than I thought. Meth. Fucking meth. Meth is evil. Meth is vile. If you do it, you're an idiot. Period. A couple years after we got married, Niff worked part-time at a record store. She started hanging around her coworkers after work while I worked late and went to school. It was three guys in particular, including that little fucker Scooter, who introduced her to it. That's how it started. We'd been together for 3.5 years by then. I was much less naive about drugs than when we first got together, but still, I had no idea she was fucked up on meth until it was too late. Niff was always a twitchy and scratchy girl, so I didn't notice an increase in that, but her energy levels were suddenly off the charts. She became hypersexual, and she worried less about birth control. She started getting mad a lot easier than normal, and she kept doing crazy, impulsive things, like tattoo a Smurf on her neck, or spray paint the living room wall of our apartment. Her dad had died a month before, so I figured it had something to do with that. I should have read the signs. I was at school when I got the call. I was in a writing class at the community college, and my phone had been blowing up with calls. I ignored it because it was my night for people to critique one of my short stories. My teacher's phone rang too. When she answered, she looked at me and told me I was needed at the hospital. Niff was in a coma, a bad reaction to meth. Her temperature was way high, something like 105, and they were afraid she was going to die. Meth. Fucking meth. I couldn't believe it. But the moment they said it, it all made sense. They wouldn't let me see her. I kept thinking it was my fault. How could I have been so stupid not to notice my wife, the woman I slept with every single night, was fucked up like that? By 4 a.m., her fever broke and she stabilized. The doctors were afraid she was going to suffer brain damage, but she seemed okay. I had never been so scared. She woke up and was ready to take a visitor. I came in and I grabbed her sweaty hands, and she held onto me with a vice-like grip, her eyes wild with fear.
"I saw our babies,"
she said.
"I died, and I went to hell, and our babies were there."
She cried and talked at the same time.
"They were boys, Adam, and they were in hell. And it was my fault. They said unborn children go to hell if their parents go to hell, and I was bad."
"Shh, it was just a dream," I said. She looked so tiny, like a child herself in the large hospital bed. In the doorway, a nurse stood, shaking her head. I knew what she was thinking. Just another junkie.
"I'm so ashamed,"
she said. Her father had left her a ton of money, and I used a sizable chunk of it to send her to a residential drug rehab here in Tucson. I visited her as much as they let me, and she did improve. A little at a time, like that train going up the hill. "I think I can, I think I can." But fuck, it wasn't easy. She yelled a lot, cried a lot, blamed me for getting her fucked up, blamed me for not stopping her. What was supposed to be 4 weeks of detox turned into 6, then 12. She was released, but she struggled every single day with it. She still dreamed of them. The boys, she called them. "I have to be good now. I have to get to heaven so they can go to heaven." It worried me, and I told her shrink the same thing. He didn't seem nearly as concerned as he should have been.
"Just be there for her,"
he kept saying. But it didn't seem like it was enough. I felt lost. The day of her rehab graduation, she almost seemed back to normal. We got home and I gave her a present I had been promising for a while. Crazy-ass sable ferret named Hamlet. He would bounce around the house and steal her soda cans, and she would laugh and clap her hands, and everything finally seemed okay. But at night, things weren't okay. She had nightmares. Terrible waking up and screaming and clutching my arms, so I bled nightmares about the boys. She never named them, because that'd make them even more real. Sometimes after the dreams, she would rock back and forth in our bed, clutching onto her old stuffed alligator.
"They're calling to me,"
she'd say. Then she'd look at me with those beautiful, impossibly large brown eyes and say,
"They call to you too."